And there are new ways of working effectively without all the fuss and hoo-ha and digging an early grave. Isn't that right, Maurice Misolowski?
I think there are, certainly for a whole lot of new people. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Good to be back.
Yeah, man. What's going on?
Yeah, so on the back of an article I put out yesterday, because I've said over the past few weeks I've got...
MauriceFuturist.com.
That's the one. I've gone a bit crazy writing articles and putting some of the, a lot of the consulting work that I've done over the last little while into documents, because I keep getting asked, is there anything we can read? And I say no, but now I can say yes. One of those articles is something that I've noticed, and certainly a whole lot of demographers and, you know, strategists have noticed over the past few years, and it's something that has been termed, because everything has to have a label, it's been called soft life.
Okay.
And then lo and behold, when I sent it across to you this morning, you sent across another term, which I hadn't come across and I'm thankful for, which was lie flat.
Yeah.
Or ting pang.
Oh, well done, Maurice. I mean, they are not really the same thing, but the notion.
I think they come from the same world, though, meaning that they are a generational response to work that has to be done.
Yeah.
And that's what soft life talks about. Soft life talks about at its core, it is not people being lazy. I mean, yes, some of them are, and of course, you know, we can look at individuals and make a case for that. But the notion is not about people being lazy. It's not about shirking work or not wanting to do work. But it is a response. It is mostly a generational response. Gen Z, Gen Y, you know, those youngins, as I refer to them, under 30s, primarily, who make up or will make up about 25% of the workforce by 2030. That's why I think it's interesting to look at them, because they seem insignificant. They're not in numbers now, but they will rule the roost over the next, you know, 6 to 10 years.
Not a millennial thing. Is it going back?
Well, it is, but millennials are still, you know, very much baby boomerish. They certainly have different characteristics, but they're still hanging on to the 9 to 5 in some ways. They definitely want a lifestyle balance, but this is a complete rework of the notion.
9 to 5 is a fashion killer, Maurice. So I'm just going to shut up and let you take the floor, because I'm going to agree with everything you say.
Well, 9 to 5 is the way that we've always worked on. Yeah, you know, it's the way that the Industrial Revolution was set about. It's in fact not true, actually. I misspoke. It's not the fact that we always, it's not the way we always worked. It's the way the Industrial Revolution taught us to work. Because prior to that, humans, lots of evidence shows this, humans did whatever they needed to do, whenever they needed to do it, wherever they needed, because we were agrarian. We worked on the land.
So that's cool.
You couldn't say to the crop, look, I'm busy this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say to the crop or the weeds or the cows or chickens, you know, I'm too busy, go do it yourself. It just didn't work. And then there were great times, great periods where nothing much needed done and you could take time off and nothing untoward was done about it. Now, that was a project, that was a task-driven world, and that's the world that really the soft life generation wants to go back to. Give me something to do, tell me what needs to be done, or I'll decide it for myself, you know, in concert with you, and it'll get done, but it's not going to get done in the 9-to-5 office environment that traditionally it might be.
The caveat is that if you give me all the info, I guarantee you it will be done. How's that?
That's the premise of this thing. Again, individuals might not live up to that. It doesn't suit every industry. It doesn't suit every person. But then again, nothing should. I think in a world where everything is prescriptive, where there is only one way to do it, we're not really going to achieve very much. We need, in most cases, to be outcome-driven. We need to make sure that the final product is done on time, on specification, on budget, and whatever other ons we want to put on that. Yeah, and that's what this generation is saying. They are saying, and it, of course, COVID exacerbated this. It was around before. It was documented, talked about, researched long before COVID came about. But COVID and technology both pushed this thing into a growing phenomenon. COVID, because, of course, lots and lots of people couldn't do the 9-to-5, come to work, you know, type stuff.
Yeah.
They had to do it a different way. So that proved the case in a way that it could never have been proven before, because employers had to release employees or workers out of the office to do things and had to trust them to do it. And we're also talking about technology that now allows that to happen really easily. Again, for some industries, some people, not everybody.
Right. Yeah, go on. This is getting better. Because, you know, immediately when you talk about these various terms, soft life, lying flat, and you can sort of feel your grandparents going, oh, you blaggers. It wasn't like that in my day.
They still will. I mean, it just doesn't matter at all. You know, I've told the story, I think, to you often, that I, I, I have a home office space, and I've been here for nearly 30 years. My mother lived with us for a great deal of that time. Mm. And whenever I sat in my office and worked, even when I talked to you, Phil, she would come in and say, "You're not working today."
Yeah, I know.
So,
what do you do for your real job?
Yeah, and she never quite understood the fact that I sat two rooms away from her in a well-defined, well-structured, well-built office, talking to people and doing things. To her, that wasn't work. And that's the same notion of this. It's really an historical legacy. The output was there. But what we're finding is, of course, that a number of things, as I've said already, are pushing this into being one of the things that many employers, many businesses are entertaining as something that's possible for them.
Yeah.
The big demographic shift is one, of course, because, as I said, the Gen Zs, the Gen Ys, the millennials, you know, the tail end of those are all, well, not all, but many of them are better educated than their previous generations. Not better or worse, just better educated, more technologically savvy.
Didn't you say in your article that one of these generations is the most educated ever, in statistically?
I didn't in this one, but yes, they are. I mean, what we're looking at is Gen Ys and Gen Zs. They're being pushed into second and third qualifications often because the traditional first qualification that many people of my vintage had, which was sufficient to get a job for a lifetime, now isn't. And the other reality for them is that they will have to retrain, even if it's in small credentials, often because the one skill set, again, won't see them through life. I mean, who had an AI qualification a year ago? And today they are the hottest thing to have, and people are retraining, even if it's in small courses.
Is the word soft correct?
Skill themselves for this new revolution of artificial intelligence. Mm. No, because I think it gives the wrong impression.
It does.
Of what it is. But it is the term that's being used to describe this. So what we're talking about here, again, I mean, inside of this is another really interesting phenomenon that we've talked, I mean, that's been talked about for the last little while.
Yeah.
And that's something that's called FIRE, F-I-R-E, which is financial independence, retire early.
Okay.
You have a whole group of people that have decided at the beginning of their careers in their 20s, teens, 20s, that they are going to go hell for leather. They're going to work really, really hard. They're going to save. Traditionally, the figure that's put with this, but there's no rule for this, is that they will save 70% of their income for 10 years. That's kind of like the underlying mantra of this movement.
Yep.
70% of their income for 10 years. In other words, they'll literally live on noodles. They'll live in cheap rental accommodation.
Oh.
They'll do everything they have to do. At the end of 10 years, they will work. I mean, these are people that will work and take extra jobs and do all kinds of stuff because what they want to do at the end of the 10 years is be in a financial position to be able to make choices for the rest of their life.
Okay.
So they've decided to give up 10 years of, you know, when most people are doing things in their late teens, early 20s, and say, no, I'm going to set myself up, and that's called FIRE, financial independence, retire early.
Okay, let me just chuck in something here, Maurice. So financial independence, obviously everybody needs to pay their rent and live and survive, but the focus is on the dosh. And I'm not trying to sound like a dreamer here, but there are other things, surely.
Not for these group. I mean, specifically for the FIRE group, which is a mantra. It's not a cult in the sense that we understand cult, but this is a mantra that they have. For them, they will literally tell you they go out once or twice a year. You know, they don't get takeaway. They don't. Many of them will even move back with parents or live in shared houses. They will sacrifice a lot.
What about the emotional toll of all of that? I mean, every article we read these days is about daily mental health.
Yeah, for them, it's a road they've chosen. You know, I don't think whether we're talking, you know, large percentages of people. I think that we're under the 10% of people. I guess we're even under the 5%. But it is a notion, and there are people that have managed to achieve financial independence within that 10-year because they save, as I said, 70%, which is a great deal of money after that period of time.
Yeah, I hear you.
But within that, so what I'm getting at here, and that was the crux of this article, was that there really isn't one size of employee anymore. That what we have now are generations that are coming to a workforce, willing and able to work, forget the others in this conversation, willing and able to work.
Yep.
But they're saying, you know, the way that traditionally we might have done it is not the way I want to do it. There's enough choice for me to be able to choose an employer. I can work globally because I'm technologically savvy. Again, not all jobs, not all people, but across the board that may be possible. And I can also do a number of things. I don't need one sole employer. So they're coming at it very, very differently. I'll take life lifestyle in one case, which is not the fire group, but I'll take lifestyle. I'll work where and when I want. I'll work on the beach or work at home or work in the office, whatever's necessary. Mm. But I'm going to make choices and guarantee you'll get what you want.
Are we at a cusp, Maurice, now? Because I'm wondering how many jobs where people actually have to pick things up, old school style, are changing.
Oh, very much. Very, very much. Forget, you've got to put manufacturing. You have to put, all the services in, the hospitals, or the fire, police, all those kinds of things obviously have to be in a place at a time. That makes perfect sense. But for the service industries, which is a growing number, and across the planet that is a growing number, because we have technology that's doing a lot of the manual work of manufacturing, of delivery soon. So a lot of the work that's going to be done over the next decades will be basically brain work, head work, rather than hand and feet work.
Mm. So our parents' jobs, in brackets, are seriously changing.
Oh, they are. I mean, they've changed already. I doubt our parents would even recognise the jobs that they started with, and that's true even if they're working in them at the moment. That if they look back on their careers, the way they're doing it, the technology they're using around them, all that has changed tremendously.
I think I wasn't joking about digging an early grave, Maurice. Is this going to have an impact on longevity?
It will, but in many ways, actually, strangely enough, it should actually impact it positively.
That's what I mean.
Because what we find is that people, well, we don't know because this is anecdotal. I mean, this is relatively new. But what we believe will happen is that people will take better care of themselves because at the core of this is well-being.
Yeah.
It's not about sitting in a hammock and just, drinking, downing martinis and having, a great time. Yeah. It's actually a lot of wellness. Oh. It's a lot of health. It's a lot of making sure that, that they are doing what they need to do in a healthy, respectful way. All of that underpins them. And if we look back on the reason that we died early or that we left this planet early, it was mostly because we were hard working. I mean, physically hard working.
Yeah, we wore things out.
Yeah, we literally wore our bodies out before we had to. And it was not unusual for us. Even 100 years ago, the average lifespan was somewhere in the 50s or 60s, and that was extreme. So what we are finding now, of course, is that it is now more common to live to 80, 90 and 100, and that will only continue down the track. Again, not for everybody, and disease and the rest we're not going to get rid of. Yeah. But for a lot of people, the ability to live up to 100 is certainly going to become more and more normal, especially for these younger groups of ZYs and millennials.
I want to go back to your thing about AI, because I get the impression there's a sort of innate thing with human beings where they need a butler, they need a home help, and here we have it.
We do, but AI wasn't at the beginning of this conversation, not ours, but the beginning of this research conversation, because this soft life and the life flat of approach also was all before AI.
Sure.
But AI's kicked this along. It's certainly given it the kick along it needed, because a lot of the things that need to be achieved can now be done through artificial intelligence in some way, including the communication, including keeping up with other people.
I think if you use some kind of assistance, whether it be human or artificial, the notion was always not because, don't do it because you're being lazy. Do it because you think that job can be done better by the lady who can clean your bathroom windows than you can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've argued, and again, at the blog, you actually find a number of articles over this as well. I've argued for a long, long time that I actually think job specifications or jobs in and of themselves actually don't make sense anymore.
No.
That what we are doing instead and what we should be doing are tasks.
Okay.
Because a job is like a basket. You put everything into it. And many of us actually never do part of what's on that job description, job specification we were hired to do. We do some of it. And many of us, in fact, most of us do things with inside of it that we weren't even told we were ever going to do.
I want to throw an angle in here, Maurice. We've got about 3 minutes left before the news. Now, I don't know if we call this a big hangover from the past, but one thing that seems to be a bit of an anathema to all of this is what we would call office culture. Some think it's very destructive.
It is, and for some people it's very destructive as well. It doesn't work well for them. Office culture certainly paints the picture of how the work will be done. If you go into an office, and I've done this countless times, I can walk into a new client, into a corporate, and I call it smelling, but I'm not smelling. I can smell the environment there. You can just see by the way people engage, by the way they're seated, by the way it's structured, how that office thinks, because it's groupthink. Office culture is really groupthink. It culturally defines how that organisation will act and behave and think and do.
That's interesting.
And that can be a good or a bad thing. It can be a wonderful thing when it's done well, and many, many corporations, businesses do it really well. But some of them do it particularly badly, and that's where they're toxic environments, where you have huge turnover in staff, where there's huge sickness, you know, all kinds of things physically come about because that culture isn't as good or as healthy as it could be.
I've never read any studies about this, but I've read bits and pieces, you know, and it keeps coming back, this one, the fact that people think the shutters come up at 9 and go down at 5. I mean, different kinds of jobs, no question. But the thing about soft life people is they're equipped with so many cool tools to do exactly what you were saying a few minutes ago.
Yeah, they absolutely are, but it's fit for purpose for them. It's not fit for purpose for everybody. Sure. So we shouldn't think this is going to be the way that we're going to work into the future wholesale. But what I'm hoping and what I'm seeing already is that this will be an option where it fits in.
Right.
That both sides, the employer and the employee or the consultant or whatever arrangement they have, can both see the sense in it for that particular set of activities. And that's what we need in a good workforce, the option to work and do things in as many ways as possible that makes sense for both people doing them.
One potential downside, I would assume, is you have to be a certain kind of person to be satellite, to be a one-stop shop. And a lot of the work you're talking about does involve being that way.
Yeah, it does. And that's one of the caveats that I put into that article too, that if you are going to work that way, you really do need to be responsible for your own mental health. You need to build strong communities around you. Your communication skills need to change as well. There are lots of things you need to do to bolster yourself because other people won't be there to do it for you. And you're right, Phil, it's really, really important because you can get sucked into this and become, you know, this introvert that really hasn't got a very healthy life at all.
You got it. Well, if you want to read his article in detail, morrisfuturist.com, go to the blog. Right?
Yep, that's it.
And it's called The Soft Life Rebellion, Redefining Future Success in a Disrupted World. Brilliant stuff, Morris. Lots more to talk about and on. In the meantime, love your work. See you soon.
Catch you next week.
Bye, bye.